Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
It's episode 233 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave. With me, as always, is Aidan Morgan.
Hello.
Should we just say it? Like,
what should we just...
Let's go steal a podcast.
Hardison!
Oh, good lord. So yeah, Leverage is back. I found something. Okay, so A, there are 8 episodes now. They are all free to watch, like the actual rest of the series, on IMDb.com, IMDbTV.com, rather, which is kind of a redirect for Amazon Prime, frankly.
Yeah.
And they have some ads, but they are free. I think we've mentioned this before, but yeah.
I just love the fact that like there's yet another place that's got television shows. I mean, eventually we're going to end up like with, you know, Mattress Warehouse and MattressWarehouseTV.com.
Well, and we're going to talk about that in a weird way, actually, because that's going to come up in a minute. But no, I kind of actually enjoy the idea that like Amazon bought IMDb and decided they wanted a streaming service that was for free stuff. Even though it's like, if you look at it, if you go to normal Amazon Prime, like, video shit, and you look up like Leverage, say you'll find it, right? It's just a redirect with like a slightly different themed front end just to show you the free stuff if you want to do it that way. And it's, you know, free with ads. And what always amazes me is that even if you have an Amazon Prime account, you still can't watch it without ads. Like, it's just like this stuff is locked to its own thing.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, but again, you can find it through Amazon normal as well, so it's just it's fine. I get it. Before I forget, there is an after show, a Leverage after show, which is basically like a podcast that they're filming, right? And this is why I mentioned when you were like the Mattress Warehouse, because it is, where is it? Yeah, it's on a thing called Electric Now. And you're like, what the fuck is Electric Now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Electric Now is Electric Now TV, which, as far as I can tell, is a power company? I'm not quite sure what Electric Now is. But it's like, yeah, like, I don't, you know, Electric Now is available on all the devices and platforms below, connected TVs, da da da. I'm like, oh. Okay, it's like Electric Entertainment. And it's a premium app produced and acquired by Electric Entertainment. And that's kind of all it says. Electric is home to Electric's podcast system, Electric Surge. And I'm like, what even are you? I don't know.
You know, there is actually a... In BoJack Horseman, there is an entire season is about the making of a show that takes place on the whattimeisitnow.com website. You go there and it tells you the time, but then they get into streaming content. So, and it ends badly, but anyway, yeah, that's,
yeah.
Once again, a joke has come true.
Yeah. I don't know that it actually is an electric company. It probably isn't, but it's just, the branding looks like it. Everything. It's just, it's very strange. and it's very low rent, but anyway, So, Leverage is back. 8 episodes, 8 more in the fall that are already done, obviously. They have been referring to it as Leverage Redemption Season 1, so hopefully this gets whatever version of ratings count for things like Amazon, that they will pay for more.
Well, I hope so, because I don't think they're paying very much. Because, I mean, you can tell it's... the budget's pretty. It looks like a lean production to me.
Again, they filmed it during COVID though, so they had major restrictions on how many people
true.
They could have.
That is true. That is
in
true.
Any set and all of that. I mean, they were filming on location in New Orleans.
Yeah, there is okay.
Which actually might be a spoiler, and I'm very sorry.
That's okay.
I thought that was in the first episode.
No, it's not. But I mean, that's
yeah. It's like early in the second. Then that's
yeah.
They move bases. So yeah, I mean, there's some money, but no, not much. I mean, but Leverage itself never cost much, I guess.
No,
but yeah,
true.
I think the COVID protocol stuff is what made it look a little empty, obviously, because they were one of the first shows to start filming.
Right, but frankly, I do not care. Like,
no, it doesn't make a difference.
There are some shows where like an empty or like empty sets or like cheaper looking sets might be distracting or and take away from the enjoyment. But not Leverage, like that.
Right,
should, they,
I mean,
they could do this
look,
on
it's
a
an
blank
empty set
stage.
Of vents. Like,
so many vents. Oh my god.
I do love that you have vents at home. I know those vents.
there is not a single moment of that opening episode, which is the only one I've watched so far, that
right.
I did not love dearly. Holy shit! Beginning to end.
Oh.
It was just such a joy. And that's actually why I didn't watch the second or any other episodes yet, because I want to keep this going. I want to keep this high for a little while longer.
Yeah, there's a speech that Hardison gives. And I forget if it's in the first episode or second.
Is it the one that he gives to Noah Wiles' character?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the end of that's at the end of the first episode.
Okay.
When he's like, "Oh,
that
you thought you were done, but you have to do the work. Then you can ask for forgiveness."
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That has the payoff to that for me is one of the sweetest lines in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Is once Hardison walks away. And you know, Wilson, Mr. Wilson turns to Sophie, and she mentions that he got it from his father.
Yes.
And it's a blink and you miss it kind of line, because you're like, wait a minute, but didn't he get... Oh, she means Nate. You know, it's such a cute little moment that kind of just pays off of the original series.
Yeah, it was delightful.
I will say that when I was watching All 8, they are all obviously delightful episodes, and like Leverage in general, some are a little thinner than others.
Yeah, sure.
But it's Leverage, like they're still a great time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel that the first two episodes, especially, are kind of set up for this is the show now.
Yeah.
You know, and so they actually, I think, pick up after this, with the exceptions of like again, like that first episode had some great like all time. Perfect Leverage moments. So,
boy,
how long do you wait for an Elliot fight, and then you get that one?
Yeah, I love the way Christian Kane does Elliot in this episode, like the sort of like barely restrained sort of like irritation with like anything that Hardison does. He's just like Hardison, and it's just fucking hilarious. Plus that fight, and it's something I forgot about watching a fight scene with Christian Kane, like when he hits people or when he gets hit, it looks real. Like
he sells the shit out of it.
Yeah, his fights look real in the way that almost no other actor makes fights look real. Like there's something like bone crunching, violent, and just like. I'll just say I would never want to get in a fight with Christian Kane because not only would I lose,
I would
probably lose with a lot of injury involved.
I mean that's it's like there's a lot of like fight scene stuff where you see people moving quickly or doing this, but it's just it. While he will obviously like move very quick, and I do like again like the very first episode of the show ever had that whole you know Elliot fight scene while a bag is dropping.
Yeah,
if you remember it.
Yeah.
This is what I do, and then this one of course has the it's faster in person like. It's faster in person, and I'm like, okay, that's a cute callback.
Yeah, that was quite.
But there is something where it's just he sells that it's not like, look at me, I'm this great fighter. It's just, he's a pit bull.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that there's not, like, grace and style in how he fights, so much as just, there is, you're right, like, there's a vicious, there's a brutality to it, there's an efficiency to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he throws a punch, it's not like a fancy punch. It feels and looks like a punch.
Yeah.
There's an authenticity to his to the way they actually choreograph it.
Mm-hmm.
That just, I think, heightens that.
And I have to say, one of the things I kind of appreciate about, you know, Leverage Redemption, and especially that fight scene, is that Christian Kane, I mean, he looks a little older now. Like, he looks...
Sure.
And he looks older, and he looks like he hasn't slept a little bit. So, you know, and also I every time you see Kane, I'm like, is that, did they dress him, or did he just show up on set in his usual clothes?
There was an interview that mentioned that.
Okay. Cause I always get this feeling that, like, he shows up to set and then the wardrobe people come up to him and he's like, no, go away. Actually dress him, but I just love the way he just looks like he showed up on set in, like, his like regular gear, and he's like, nah, I got this.
So what happened? So, of course, you know, they all show up to their fittings and all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all the characters are supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be like about 9 years since the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think less than that, like 6, I think is what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to go back and watch the first episode again to nail down the time frame.
I think it's 8. It's supposed to be 8 years, I think, since the last.
Okay, yeah. That'd be reality, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, okay, well, like, look how people's styles evolve, right? Like, Hardison was always very stylish, so let's update his style.
Yeah.
You know, Sophie's very stylish, let's update her style. You know, Parker, let's just change up for, like, newer cuts on things. And she's been, you know, obviously working with Elliot and Hardison, so her style mm-hmm. shift.
Yeah.
And they apparently got to Christian Kane, and they had one outfit on them. Like, everyone else had, like, all these options. They had one outfit, and it was one of the old outfits from the old show. And they're like, if it ain't broke, and everyone just laughed.
Oh, that's great.
And they just used the old wardrobe.
Yep.
They're like,
okay.
They're just like, it's Elliot. Like, it's not that he doesn't evolve as a person, but he's also locked into being so honest with himself as to who he is that he has no need to ever change that.
Perfect.
But I just, yeah, I love that they just showed up with one outfit. Like, this just, we're doing the same thing, dude. Shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, no, that makes perfect sense to me. Because everybody else, yeah, looked like they had sort of changed the times, except for Elliot. Although Aldous Hodge, dude, looks great. I mean, they all look good, but Aldous Hodge looks fantastic.
Well, it's because he's going to be Hawkman. Like, he's in superhero training.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know, he was pretty ripped, but I mean, he also just looks like he's just one of those people who appears to, like, say, "What's time? What's that?" and not even bother.
Right.
But yeah, it's so good to have these characters back and to have them fall into the same those rhythms of how they bounce back and forth.
Right,
and,
like,
And I know that
Like the new cast.
Yeah, no, the thing is, Hodge, because I've only watched the first episode, Hodge is still there.
Right.
So we haven't gotten to his replacement yet. I'm curious about that. But I really like Noah Lyle as Wilson.
He was so hot and cold for me, usually.
Yeah. But it's
like, I like him in some things, I don't like him in others, but I like him in this.
Yes. I find Noah Lyle's choices as an actor, like the roles he takes, to be really, it's confounding, because I always thought, here's a guy who could be sort of a real leading man, and then he's like, he ends up in, like, Dean Devlin stuff. Like the librarians.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just a weird sort of swerve after whatever whether it was ER or whatever hospital show he was in for years. And then he was in that really god-awful Alien Invasion show. But he really gives his all to it, which is, I find, fascinating. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I like that. I run hot and cold, and I really like him in this, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you haven't seen the other new character yet. But again, like, I do think it is an interesting move, and this, again, isn't in no way a spoiler. But as you see the old crew, who are, you know, like, again, like, three of them at least have been steadily doing this for the last 8 years.
Right.
You know, never mind all the other time. And now you have people who are new. And it's something that we didn't quite get with the original show. Because even when Nate first finds them in the first show, they were already the best at what they did. And they were already criminals and used to this.
Yes.
But this time you get to watch them pull people into their world. And they have to play catch up with, here are these people who not only were the best at what they did, you know, 13 years ago before all of Leverage started. Right. But have now had all of the over a decade working together and refining their movements, and how do you plug into that? And it's something that, like, as a as an actor, you'd have to ask yourself. But having the characters have to deal with as well is a nice touch, because it also means that you don't get stale. You're not just locked into what we had.
Yeah,
no, you know, there are new dynamics that can happen.
Yeah, that's it's a nice little bit of variation on the formula, which makes it, I think, just fresh enough that it's not stale, as you're saying. Yeah. I don't know, I just watched this and for the first couple of minutes I wasn't quite sure, because there was that sort of awkward little montage, and then and then there was the scene at the graveyard, which seemed like really sort of an abrupt intro, but as soon as all the main characters are together in a room and talking, it was just this instant sort of chemistry and just this beautiful, like, this such pitch perfect dialogue.
That is the one other thing I have really heard, is that apparently, like, the first scene that they shot, because they were all nervous, right, like, can we do this, was just the, like, that core together in one room.
Yeah.
Like, that's how they wanted to kick it off. And they were all just like, oh, right. Yeah, no, then they didn't miss a beat.
Yes.
Yeah, no, once you get to the, you know, we should steal something.
It's... Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty great. And I can't tell you how much I miss Parker's, like, just lunacy.
Right.
Let's
and how it's
on that.
Changed
let's,
since. Let's,
yeah, that's true. There are some different notes to her.
Yeah, there are more as you go forward. And I had a question that I don't even want to bring up, because you'll either notice it or you won't, and eventually it'll be mentioned.
Okay.
I had a question considering how the series ended and how this crew is running that confused me a little bit.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, no, it really is, like, this is, like, the best possible outcome, right? And, I mean, on the Timothy Hutton stuff, like, yes, we don't want him involved anymore. I understand this. And that's kind of a shame, just for the Nate Ford of it all.
Hmm.
But I actually think the show works really well without him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, as the sort of the patriarch, I mean, those characters are great, but they are the one... They're the characters that you can let die, if that makes sense.
Right.
And everything, and then everybody else has to carry on in their absence and sort of, like, carry on and reinvent themselves subtly.
Right. And I think that's the problem, right? If we still had, like, Nate, we wouldn't have as much character growth as we have.
Exactly.
Everyone would kind of regress to where they were.
Yeah. So let's fridge Nate. So excellent, good stuff. Just also lines like, let's bonk him on the head and, like, leave him in Venezuela or something. And with Wilson in the background, bad idea.
Stolen paintings? I do love stolen paintings.
So, no, they're in that drawer. Over there.
And they're just both so weirdly offended by that.
Like, it would be in that drawer. Come on. Yeah, that was...
The food truck... thing?
I'm curious
about
this.
That is the first episode, right?
Yep, that is the first episode.
Okay. I just love the conceit that essentially, like, instead of Lucille, we now just have food trucks everywhere.
Yeah.
So, like, wherever they go, there's a food truck they could just kind of commandeer.
Yep, that's pretty clever.
Which makes me wonder about, like, the vets that Elliot's hiring to run these food trucks otherwise, because if they're not being run by Leverage International people otherwise, but they're stabbed by vets. Like, the vets have to be right into this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because half of this van is a Lucille.
Oh, God.
Also, it opens up a question or two.
It really does. Another bit that I liked, and I realize that I'm just repeating lines and scenes that I liked, but I mean this is how much I just enjoyed the hell out of this one. That bit where they're talking about all the various places in the world they need to get, you know, materials for forge a Rembrandt painting, and then Elliot's like, you know, I know somebody in Afghanistan, I know somebody here, and I know a guy who owes me a favor in Mexico. And the artisan's like,
oh,
so
that
he's
was
gonna
so
pick
weirdly
up some
dark,
nasty ass books off of some cactus, and it goes to this strangely dark place. He's like, yeah, I was made him dig his own grave, but then I told him the check cleared. It's like laughter, but no, oh Jesus.
They don't shy away from the fact that these are terrible people.
They are doing a good thing,
but they have pasts.
Exactly.
And I mean, that's the entire point of the show, right?
Yeah.
You know, for one level of it. So of course you have to deal with it.
Also, Reed Diamond as basically the Sackler, you know, patriarch.
Yes.
Holy shit, he was good. Like, he played such it's Reed Diamond, but I mean, he played such a smug asshole.
Oh, you know what this episode didn't have? I don't even know if the second one does. I know it's there by the third. It doesn't have the new opening.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen it yet.
New theme music.
Ooh.
And I swear to God, it's a weird cross for me mentally between Archer and Middleman. Visually.
Oh, interesting.
I don't dislike it. But I don't know if I really like it. I'm not really a fan of the new theme music, but I do like that we kept all the other music cues. Because that was a big part of it for me, too. Was like, the minute they're like, okay, let's do the thing, you know, and they get on the count, and suddenly, like, that old bass line comes back. And you're like, yes, okay, thank you. Like, like some of their music cues are just such a part of the show.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's really a smart thing they didn't change it.
Yeah. And also, I just can't tell you how much I missed sort of like these characters as like Avengers for the 99%. What a joy. Just what yeah. Like this show's like, we know who the real assholes are, and you know, it's, we know that they're never really going to pay in the real world, but we can give you an hour where these people pay, and it's, you know,
right.
And that's that. That on its own is slightly depressing, but at the same time, deeply satisfying.
Yeah, something Rogers mentions, and it kind of comes up in the first episode, is that, you know, back in the day of the original show, they could be like, okay, well, we're going to expose them to the media. There are a number of episodes that end with that, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, these days, that just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you resolve these? How do you take these people down? Became a question in the room.
Right. Oh, interesting.
And for the show. Because you can't just go like, hey, we're just going to call the media on them because the media doesn't fucking care. It doesn't do anything now.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that? And that does play into the show. So, good times.
Good times. Yeah, I'll probably be watching more, if not the entire sort of, like, you know, rest of the series over the next week, just because, damn.
It's hard not to. Like, I am impressed that you managed to only watch one. Like, I told you before we started recording, like, I intended to be like, I'm going to watch, like, one, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, or, you know, three or four or five or six, or just fucking all eight. You know, just... Anyway, there was also, this week also saw something else, which, again, made more money than Leverage.
yes.
Yeah, actually, talking, of course, about Black Widow, and apparently Disney actually revealed that, like, their premium access, they made, like, $60
million. Jeez.
And in theaters, like, domestic alone, they made $80 million. Like, they're doing better than Fast and the Furious by a bit.
Wow.
And, yeah, that Marvel money... I do wonder if the fact that they made almost as much through the Premier Access Disney thing as they did in theaters is going to convince them to reconsider doing that with all the Marvel movies, at least.
Hey, maybe they'll do a Black Widow sequel if with this kind of reception.
Sure.
It'll just be like a Natasha Romanoff's corpse. But slightly different topic. Apparently, yeah. we're getting a Tomorrow War sequel.
I mentioned that last week that they were already working on it, and you were just so pained you put it out of your head.
Oh my God! Yes, obviously. Jesus. Yeah, I was pained to relearn it, but I guess I didn't block it this time.
Well, I'm sorry.
Anywho, yes, Black Widow. Yes, a big deal. I'm actually glad it's doing well. I found this film really interesting. I mean, although I also found it hard to see because of the sort of years of discourse that have encrusted over this film, between delays and of course the ever present question of why didn't Black Widow get a solo film sooner, for which
sure.
we all know the answer to that.
Yes,
but it's good that we finally got it. I thought quite a lot of it I really liked. Like as a sort of a James Bond style film. I like the action. I don't care if Taskmaster wasn't who everybody thought.
See,
Taskmaster
I do in a weird
be.
Way.
Okay.
Like I was fine with the Mandarin thing, you know, I got Trevor Slattery, like that was a whole lot of fun.
Right.
And it left the door open for bringing in the actual Mandarin, which we'll do in Shang-Chi. But, like, why waste Taskmaster? He's such a fun villain that can show up against almost any hero, like, in a different way. That the actual character is a fascinating character.
Okay.
You know, to where, like, again, like, his powers, you know, obviously anything he sees, he can replicate in terms of physical ability. But the more he does it, the more of his own memories of his life he loses.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right, like that's it. It's a fascinating character build, and so the idea that we just tossed it away for this is just like, but why?
You like, get more now, I guess.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like I don't care that they, you know, I just care that they did away with the character. I don't care that they changed it to this other person under the mask. That's fine. Who cares?
Yeah.
But it was just they kind of completely did away with Taskmaster.
So there's kind of a missed opportunity. I mean, I suppose we could still get Taskmaster as a character. I mean, she's still there, but not as a villain. I mean, or at least not the same sort of character figure anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows? I guess there are ways to bring it back. But anyway, so yeah, Taskmaster, right. Black Widow. Yeah, I don't know. I'm starting to think that for movies that are not amazing. Not seeing them in theaters really is hurting them for me more than I thought.
Hmm.
I could feel that if I had seen this in a theater, I would have liked it 10 to 15% more than I do.
You know, I'm with you on that. Like this, like it's reliant to a certain extent on spectacle but oddly enough, like my usual feeling with Marvel movies is that at this point is that the third act thing falling from the sky, lots of action scenes are mm-hmm. starting to kind of drag for me. And
yes,
this one, I felt like I watched them like, okay, well, there's as soon as we saw that the Red Room was in the clouds, I'm like, oh, okay, I know what's going to happen, but it didn't bother me too much. Maybe it was just like, okay, I'm willing to like sit through this part. It's just,
right.
It's going to happen. There's nothing I can do about it. It would be a waste. It would be a waste of my time not to like this. If that makes any sense.
Yes.
But at the same time, it was easily the weakest part of the movie.
It always is.
Yeah. The thing that I liked, and I think most people would agree, is just the interactions with the sort of the fake family, and Florence Pugh, doing like stuff like, I mean, like sort of making fun of her pose. But my favorite, like, Pew Johansson bit of dialogue is about her vest.
The vest thing kind of annoyed me, actually. So, go on about it.
So anyway, because just because you're just sort of like talking about pockets, and then she says, "You like it, I do," and then Pew's character is like, "I know, it's so cool," and the idea of being a thing that she actually, it was like something she did as soon as she became, or the first thing she did when she became her own person.
Right.
Like, so this functions as this symbol of like of her commitment to individuality. Right. So I liked it that way. So what was your?
I did
your
too.
Beef?
Oh, it wasn't a beef. It was just it amused me that they went for a big emotional like kind of heartstring pull with the vest specifically, in a way that took people a long time because it was a reference to something that had already happened. Of course, so you have to think back.
Hmm.
But if you go back and watch Infinity War,
right,
when she's with the outcast Avengers, because that's where she ends up. And she's already dyed her hair and all this. She's wearing the vest the entire movie. That's her new outfit?
Right.
Right. And that's, look at this heartstring thing. See, she was wearing the vest the entire time. It's but we don't care now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to retroactively feel something for that.
Yeah, I get that.
Why are we trying it?
I get that. Although, when I didn't remember that. So, for me, that wasn't... The fact that she had the vest on Infinity War wasn't part of my thought process watching that scene. For me, it was about Florence's character. And when I saw her at the end of the movie, Johansson at the end of the movie with the vest, I'm like, oh, that's right.
Right. Well, that's where I meant it happens. I liked the vest stuff at the beginning. It was just at the end when they're like, look at how important her sister is. I'm like, that she never even mentions, like... And obviously, I understand why.
Right.
Because the movie hadn't been written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we're going to have to assume that, they split up and she doesn't talk to Yelena again, and then half of the world gets wiped out 5 years, so Yelena must have been.
Exactly.
Okay. So if we have to assume that, then at no point does any of this come up when she's talking to, Cap or anything else in Endgame. And it's not that it's a stretch, because this is always the problem when you start rewriting history, right?
Right.
And I'm normally fine with it, but the vest part makes it stick out.
Mm,
because if the vest matters that much that she's constantly wearing it, the idea that she never mentions her.
Yep, that's true. And I mean, I think, this brings up, I think, two issues. One is the fact that, the way these movies were made was sort of out of order, but also the whole thing about it always feels with Black Widow, they're always sort of have always to some extent been sort of constructing her character sort of retroactively or off to the side. And I think this is just a symptom of that writ large, where they're trying to make something out of what little they had. And you can only be so successful in the end with that. And that's
right.
This is how it's gone.
And again, I'm 99% willing to ignore it.
Yeah.
Because this is part of life completely.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And again, if it was in a comic, I wouldn't care at all. It is just because they very consciously were like, we're going to pull on your heartstrings on this one. You just watch. And I'm like, oh, okay, but you're not. Do you know what I mean? That's what it killed it for me was don't go for that effect if you can't deliver it, because then we're just going to giggle.
So this is the sort of MCU dramatic equivalent of writing checks with your mouth. I hear what you're saying.
And it was just a mistake.
Yeah. See, I didn't feel the way, but now that you've said it, I do. So, God damn it.
Sorry about that.
that's fine. I mean, I think obviously this is sort of not, top tier Marvel. It's one of their, I don't want to say lesser outings, because it, in its own way, it's a, I find it very interesting. I really appreciated the way, especially in the opening, the way it looked different than a standard Marvel movie.
Yes.
And sort of the different sort of structure it had for quite a while, until of course you get to that big action-y ending. So that I very much liked. I like David Harbour and his sort of constant sort of preening and sort of like claim that he fought Captain America. Although I believe the Red Guardian did fight Captain America in the comics.
Oh, well, I mean, sure. Again, but like that's the thing. Like, in the comics, there's the whole Winter Guard. Like,
right.
That is not a thing.
Yeah.
So, sure.
Although, I mean, the weird, but there's always these weird, also weird details with you know, movies, like American movies, when they try to do foreign stuff. Like, for example, like the Red Guardian has Karl Marx tattooed on his knuckles. But
right.
But it would be Cyrillic, like, when you think about it. Or you don't even have to think about it. You're like, why the fuck isn't it in Cyrillic?
Uh-huh.
Or like, they're the sort of the sometimes really baffling choices as to when they were speaking English or when they were speaking Russian or when they were speaking English with a Russian accent or an American accent. At some points it makes sense, and some points you're like, why has it been done this way? And then, of course, you get Ray Winston's bizarre Russian, non-Russian, whatever the fuck accent. I really liked Ray Winston in this. I just, there's just a menace that comes off the guy. But yeah, I think they brought him in and they're like, can you do a Russian accent, Ray? And he's like, no. That's why they're like, oh, well, okay. I guess you're going to do it fitfully, intermittently. And I was able to call the thank you for your cooperation line at least a minute ahead of time, when I was like, oh, I get it. She's just making herself look helpless so he can brag and boast and eventually reveal what the info that she needs. That's like, I love that move in any movie, especially when everything looks helpless and then you flash back and it's like, oh, they've been making plans this whole time.
I kind of liked it.
It could have been done more gracefully, I think, but I enjoy that in a movie, and
yes.
I appreciate it being
done. It's a good kind of heisty type move. It's fun.
Exactly. Although I think I'm with you on this. It was like, oh, I like that, but not as much as I wish I did in this film.
Right. Because also breaking your nose isn't severing a nerve, nor are you going to sever a nerve by hitting your head on a desk.
No.
Nor do you sever a nerve so you stop smelling. That, again, if it was just break your nose and you can't smell the fire ones, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about a nerve?
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with anything. Just say break your nose and you're done. Like, they tried to make it fancy. I don't know why.
Yeah, I know. I think that felt like something that had been like thrown back and forth in a writer's room, like, or between drafts, and finally it landed there. And then they're like, okay, now we have to shoot the movie. Frankly, or it just sounded like an idea that nobody wanted to say no to. I've read some reviews, like some people really enjoyed the film and some people sort of said this is clearly just a corporate product and it feels perfunctory. But I don't think...
So reviews of any Marvel movie.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's like purely perfunctory and purely just sort of fulfilling some sort of corporate mandate. It obviously has part of that. But I appreciated, there are enough moments that I enjoyed, and generally not the big action moments, although they were fine.
Right.
But mostly also watching Florence Pugh act, which is always a pleasure because she's just such a good actor.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, you know, and they are, of course, at the end setting up a Dark Avengers thing, kind of obviously, between this and Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got Valentina or whatever at the end. Yep. And I think we're actually getting Pugh's character who's going to be on the Hawkeye.
In Hawkeye. That's kind of telegraphed, isn't it?
Yes, very much.
But yeah, I think it was a fine movie. It just, it hits that, I was actually talking about this the other day. That there's like, I think everyone has their own set of like 3 to maybe 5 max, like Marvel movies that you're like, I love this movie and I could rewatch this a whole bunch. Right? Like your upper echelon, like for me, like Winter Soldier, Iron Man 3, Thor Ragnarok type of Marvel movie, right?
Yeah.
Then just below that, there's that second tier, which you could generally watch, you might have to be in the right mood for, but a lot of times maybe you'll watch it, you'll turn off the third act. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just that, like, they're a little bit lesser. And then there's the bog-standard Marvel movie, which you enjoy watching. If you never see it again, you'll be fine. If you happen to see it again at some point, you'll be fine. But it's an enjoyable time when you're watching it.
Precisely.
And I think this is definitely, like, somewhere between the latter two categories.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
like, it's not quite just the bog normal one. It's a little bit better than that, but it's not quite... Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, it is. I'm with you on that as well. I probably will watch it again. I'm just sort of curious to see.
Sure.
I want to see a little more. I like the, and I find it interesting in this, you know, in our day and age of QAnon, that we have sort of this. The villain is this sort of middle-aged, you know, aging middle-aged man who's basically traffics in girls.
Right.
And there's that one line, there's one natural resource that the world has in abundance, and it's girls. And I'm like, this is sort of, there's something more to be said that Black Widow just kind of doesn't say, but I find it interesting that it's in the air, the atmosphere of this film.
I kind of appreciated it, but I also had a terrible, terrible brain moment when I heard that line. Because, you know, all the Marvel movies, a lot of their stuff they have to make sure can play in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's a really awkward thing to say about when you're going to be airing in China.
Oh, that's...
Considering their ongoing, like, you know, hundreds of years of atrocity there.
Right. And lots of infanticide from the one child.
That's what I'm saying.
With girls. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, it becomes an awkward little line suddenly.
Jesus, I never thought about that.
And just because I've been thinking about the whole, like, you know, like, oh, we have to make sure we can air this in China moment. Just because sometimes I think about that with the Marvel stuff. And I happened to be, like, thinking about it when I was watching this. Just kind of going, like, okay, I'm curious how this would play. And then that line, I was like, that line culture is going to be like, you wish. And it's... it's awkward as hell. Yeah, so that happened. Anyway.
Also, Natasha Romanoff knows the lines, knows Moonraker well enough. That she can actually, like, she actually knows the lines, which is probably more character detail than we've gotten, like, so far. So, that was nice.
I mean, before this, we knew she liked peanut butter sandwiches.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
And once again, the whole thing hinges on a data dump, which is exactly what she did in Winter Soldier.
Yes.
So it's about secrecy. So she's a character who's like secret and opaque, but spills secrets, you know,
right.
as her go-to move.
I also find it kind of interesting that, you know, and she's like, oh, I've lived many lives and all this. I'm like, okay, this is the character after she's learned that doesn't work for her and is her entire problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that was I mean, I get it because she's kind of half regressing at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still just weird.
Yeah.
Also, like, her little assistant out of nowhere is like, that's a, like, I he better be back somewhere because that character makes no sense.
Not really.
Yeah, he's just there. And I'm like, okay, like, he set up, like, the Budapest thing. Like, he better show up in Hawkeye.
That'd be nice.
Because Hawkeye should know him.
Yes, of course.
So I kind of want him to, you know, just like quietly just be like, here's some more fucking arrows, you dick. You know, just whatever it is.
Yeah, I feel like he was set up to recur.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, I would be very surprised if he never pops up again. Yeah, but also my favorite, just, if we want to stop talking about this, my favorite review title that is on Defector. It says, all it takes to make a half-decent Marvel movie is for the main character to be dead. And I was like, ooh, burn. Yeah.
That's messed up. I think on that note, we should just end a little early and just play, because we're not going to top that. We're just not.
No, probably not. We can, no, we'll just... Yeah, I mean, I wanted to talk about Alligator Loki, but that can wait.
Well, next week we'll have more leverage. I'm sure you'll have watched at least a couple more episodes, and mm-hmm. you'll let me know which ones you're watching, and I'll rewatch them so like we're on the exact same page. And we'll also have the end of Loki. So
yeah, that's I'm looking forward to that.
All right, but until then, we'll cue some music. Yay!
Music. Boo! Boo! Boo!